We know you love our audio podcast, but did you know that we're on YouTube too? That's right. Search The Fade Route with DNZ and you can find full-length episodes available to you whenever you want it. Go to YouTube and search The Fade Route with DNZ.
Well, it's a big show.
Welcome to The Fade Route. With DNZ.
Yeah, it's a big show.
Here are your hosts.
Crack it up, tell them them
DNZ. Welcome everybody to this week's episode of The Fade Route with DNZ. I am Z and we got a great show for you. The XFL makes a deal with the NFL. LeBron James wants to play with his son. And we're ordering up the five most unlikely Super Bowl MVPs. But we begin today with a landmark, groundbreaking settlement in the world of women's soccer. The U.S. Women's National Team and the U.S. Soccer Federation have agreed to an equal pay settlement of $24 million. Originally, the Women's National Team requested $67 million in their lawsuit, but agreed to a lump sum payment of $22 million as back pay and a leveling of past performance and just a measure of equity with the U.S. men's national team. And there's an additional $2 million agreed upon by U.S. soccer that will go into an account to benefit U.S. women's national team's players in their post-career goals and charitable efforts, which is a nice touch. And this is a step closer to the equal pay for equal work that we are looking for in women's sports. It is not without its critics. While players like Megan Rapinoe and others are lauding this agreement, former U.S. Women's National Team goalkeeper Hope Solo, remember her? She's back in the news as she has been highly critical of this settlement, saying that it's heartbreaking and infuriating because it's contingent upon the collective bargaining agreement being agreed upon. So, in her eyes, according to a tweet sent by her this afternoon, this settlement is not a huge win. It's heartbreaking and infuriating. A promise of equal pay from the Federation and back pay for a select group of players isn't equal pay, and it's not what this fight was about. That may be the case, but you have to admit it's a good first start. The women's national team has done all the winning, has done all the winning. The U.S. men's national team never even sniffs the World Cup and may not sniff the World Cup yet again. Yet, they get paid a shit ton more than our champions do. And frankly, that is something that, you know, leaves a lot to be desired. And you hope that this is trending in the right direction and that the collective bargaining agreement is agreed upon, so that way this will be ratified and we will truly be closer and we'll truly be on the road to equity between men's and women's sports. And here he is. I've known this guy since our days on carousel shoes, flight crew through and through, the last QB in St. John's history. What's up, D? How's it going, man?
Yeah, definitely a step in the right direction. A lot of people don't realize, but at one point, the equal pay portion of the lawsuit was actually dismissed, and the players had to appeal. But in the end, the players emerged with a considerable amount of money. I understand where Solo's coming from. You know, she's worried that this is like a string attached to the collective bargaining agreement. It very well could be, but they're still getting something here. They're acknowledging that the women were wronged, and moving forward, hopefully, things can get changed.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. Equal pay is important, and the first issue is always admitting that there is a problem. And in the past, the U.S. Women's National Team and the Soccer Federation have always been hesitant to even admit that there was a problem. And you also see that in the WNBA, where WNBA players usually, now it's starting to get a little bit, it's starting to become more lucrative in the States, but you had players like Diana Taurasi go abroad because the game of women's basketball was valued so much more outside of the States, and they could get paid more outside of the States than they could playing in the WNBA. And we now are on the right track, and we are definitely going to make it, you know, it's definitely going to be a more level playing field. But it's always sad when you have to litigate these kinds of things, but it's never surprising that these things happen.
Well, it's like you said, I mean, the women's team is the team that actually wins. Like, they win. They actually do well. And they're on a national stage. They're revered in soccer by other countries. Like, we're damn good at soccer on the women's side. The basketball argument's a little tough because the WNBA, I don't really know if the WNBA actually makes any money. And, you know, the problem there is I don't think women's basketball gets as much support. I don't think women's basketball gets as much support as women's soccer does. And you do have players, like you said, Taurasi, that go overseas where, you know, their impact is largely felt, and it is appreciated by women in other countries because they don't have that kind of platform and they don't have that kind of ability. But it is good to see this go through, and it is nice to see a win for the women's soccer team.
It's time for the fade-in, where we give a nod to the trending sports stories of the week. Absolutely, and after the fight, it's finally over. But we would be remiss if we did not begin today's show with the fight that occurred this past Saturday between the Michigan Wolverines, particularly head coach Juwan Howard, former NBA champion, member of the Fab Five, you know, now Bo Schembechler's Michigan man, you know? Like, when I want a Michigan man, that is who Bo Schembechler had in mind. What he probably didn't have in mind was coach Juwan Howard taking a swing at Wisconsin head coach Joe Krabbenhoff after Michigan lost 77-63. Now, Howard still has not apologized for the incident. He said in the postgame that he was protecting himself because coach Greg Gard put his hand on him inappropriately. Howard has been suspended for 5 games, so the rest of the regular season. He's been fined $40,000, and coach Phil Martelli, if you guys remember Coach Martelli, St. Joe's, Delonte West, Jameer Nelson, that Phil Martelli. He's Juwan Howard's second in command. He's actually taking over for the next five games while Howard is serving his suspension. So, D, is this a big deal, little deal, or no deal at all?
Yeah, I mean, he did actually wind up apologizing on Monday, thankfully. I mean, this is a big deal, man. I mean, Michigan is a big-time program. And Howard set a bad example for Michigan, for the Big Ten, for D1 basketball, and for all his players. The handshake is supposed to be the time when you come together and say, hey, man, regardless of what was said or what was done during the last hour we just played each other, good game. Good for you. You know, good try if you lost, or, hey, man, you got us this time. It's not your time to take a shot at somebody, especially this guy's not even an athlete. This is not Podunk College in the middle of nowhere. This is Michigan. This is Tom Brady land. This is, you know, the Big Ten. This is a big deal. And Juwan Howard, you're an NBA champion. Act like it, man. Originally, I thought they should have, you know, suspended him for, like, you know, the whole season. Because I really was just, I mean, I'm talking about Big Ten tournament, next five games, NCAA tournament. Well, think about, you know, you're gone, dude. Like, we're firing you. You're out of here. And then I've come a little bit down to earth and said, you know what? Maybe the five-game suspension is enough, but these are college kids, you know? Someone could have really seriously got hurt in that melee. And all because the guy called a timeout with 30 seconds left, even though he was up 13? I mean, listen, I had a similar thing happen to me in high school where a team did that to us. They called a timeout even though they were up big by 30. They were up big with 30 seconds left, and their coach called a timeout with, you know. And you know what our coach said? Next time, we're going to be up by 30 when we play them. And that's exactly what happened. That's how you get back at these guys. You don't take swings at them in the line. And so what if the guy touches you? What is this, the South Side of Chicago in 1980? What are you in grammar school, man? Shrug it off. Be like, hey, man, don't touch me. Like, come, let's talk about this. Like, be an adult. Don't be a thug. And in this situation, he was a thug.
So to give proper context to this, you know, we definitely need to put that into proper perspective. Guard actually put in his walk-ons, okay? So in your analogy, right, you're losing by 30 and they put in their – if they put in their freshman, it would be a similar kind of situation, right? Guard calls a timeout because this team is full of walk-ons. They're not his star players. Michigan is still playing its starters, still playing full court press, still trying to win this game. It's rightfully so that these walk-ons would be flustered. So I can understand why a coach, still in the game, still in the moment of the game, would call a timeout to settle his flustered team. No lead is safe. No lead is ever safe. So I completely understand why Coach Guard would want to keep his guard up, no pun intended, but you can't be grabbing people. Like, you can't. I understand that, you know, you're trying to, you know, to try and talk to him. You're trying to, like, you know, grab his arms, like, get his attention. But there are better ways, especially in a hypersensitive environment, just after the flush of a game that was intense, it was hotly contested, there are better ways to go about it. You know, maybe you wait until afterwards and you send, you know, a team manager over and say, hey, coach would like a word with you, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be a way to do it. But don't grab a dude's arm, because you and I, like, we both know, like, we're not expecting something. All of a sudden, we get our arm grabbed. What's our first instinct? To
punch.
Start swinging.
Punch. first, second punch, man. First reaction punch.
Right. Then ask questions.
Yeah.
So I completely understand. Both are reasonable. Both are reasonable.
But neither of us are head coaches of Michigan, though. Like, neither of us are the head coach of a basketball program in Division I college basketball.
No, we aren't.
And so for us to, maybe to take that mindset, right, as soon as someone grabs our arm or touches us, to, you know, swing, okay, but we're not, well, we're not molding college minds on a national stage on television, right? There's a time and place for everything. And you're taking a, you know, from what I understand, from what I read, Guard was simply calling timeout, like you said, to help out his walk-ons, to advance the ball, you know, just to get it across half court. Like, let's just try to help this situation out a little bit. A good teaching moment, possibly. But you can't do that. You set a bad example for the players on your team. And like I said, someone could have gotten hurt.
Somebody definitely could have gotten hurt. And three players already were implicated in this, right? You have Michigan forward, you have Terrence Williams, you have Musa Diabate, and then you have Wisconsin guard Jacob Neath, right? They were all suspended for their roles in this action. So this was a domino effect, because the action of run it back. The action of the arm grab leading to the punches led to the players throwing the punches. Now all hell has broken loose. So it has created a domino effect, and frankly, it's another instance where the quote-unquote adults in the room are the ones behaving like children. And frankly, I'm fine with the 5-game suspension. I'm fine with the $40,000 fine. You know, you're going to hit him in the pocketbook. That's definitely the way to do it. You definitely have people's attention now. And what I don't like is that Krabbenhof is not expected to be punished for this, because he played a role as well, right? He was also, I mean, he wasn't just a face getting punched, right? Let's be real here. He wasn't just an innocent bystander. He wasn't collateral damage. There was a clear reason why Juwan Howard just wasn't swinging for the sake of swinging. And, you know, Krabbenhof definitely has a role. Guard was also fined 10 grand. So if maybe, you know, not something from the league, maybe Wisconsin is going to internally suspend Krabbenhof or internally punish Krabbenhof. But him escaping without blame, it doesn't sit well with me, because There was no right, there was no wrong here. There was just escalating levels of bad behavior.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're right in a sense. Guard shouldn't have grabbed him, but I think he could tell Howard was upset, and he was trying to hold him from walking away. Because I think what Howard kind of said to him was like, I'm not going to forget that. And Guard was trying to hold his arm to keep him from walking past and be like, hey, listen, this is why I did it. I wasn't trying to show you up. I was trying to advance the ball and trying to explain. And you know what? You're right. He probably shouldn't have grabbed him. He probably shouldn't have put his hands on him. He did. It's over. People are suspended. People are fined. But, man, that was wild.
Do you love brownies? Of course you love brownies. But you know what's better than a brownie? A delicious, handcrafted, gourmet brownie delivered right to your doorstep. That's what our guys at Sweet Life Brownie Co. offer. Chef Tommy D and the crew offer a dozen delicious delights that you will crave, from the classic OB to Dutch apple to campfire s'mores and many more. Check out their website, sweetlifebrownieco.com, for their Friday brownie drops. At noon, their site goes live and you see what they're making. Since you're there, become a site member and earn points. You earn 50 points just by signing up. Make sure you follow them on Instagram and Facebook too, at sweetlifebrownie_co, for the latest updates and their latest releases and creations. That's sweetlifebrownieco.com. Give them a call, 845-641-3043, and tell them D&Z sent you. That's sweetlifebrownieco.com, 845-641-3043.
Sweet Life Brownie Cup, because there's always room for a brownie.
And another wild thing that took place is the XFL and the NFL have created a partnership where the XFL will test out new equipment and potential rule changes. The league will not serve as a developmental league for NFL players, but seems to have the backing of the NFL. What does this mean for the XFL, NFL, and the USFL, which should be starting soon?
Well, if we think about the last time the XFL actually was relevant, I'm not counting the last time, when they started out great and then ended up suing Oliver Luck, I'm going to talk about early 2000s. We actually got some innovative tweaks and ultimately the presentation of the NFL as we know it is what changed the most, right? The idea of the zip line cam, all of that came from the XFL. Now, we're going to see what is really going to come of this, because I liken it to that short-lived partnership with the Atlantic League that Major League Baseball did, where they moved the mound back 6 inches, or they move the bases and they experiment with the robo ump, and you know, it's the breaking ground for these rules that may or may not affect the game that we know. So in a way, this is going to be like the petri dish that the ESPN article that Kevin Seifert wrote, he's likening it to a petri dish. And I can understand that as well. So ultimately, I don't think it's going to last that long, just because I don't see the XFL lasting that long. And if the NFL is able to get one thing out of it, they'll be beneficial. They're not going to be trading talent. They're not going to be doing anything like that. If they can get, you know, better equipment, I think that'll benefit them in the long run. Ultimately, the USFL is not going to be affected by this either, because I don't see the USFL, again, another one, I don't see them being around that long. I don't see them as direct competition, but the hunger for any product that's not the NFL just isn't there. The USFL just had their draft the other night. Absolute dreck. Like, these are guys that, they couldn't hack it in they couldn't hack it in the XFL. So, I mean, the highest profile player in the USFL right now is Paxton Lynch. Need I say more? Paxton Lynch is the most notable USFL player. So it would be great if the NFL can get something out of this. I think it's going to be more one-sided in that regard. But ultimately, I don't think this is as big of a deal as people think it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to start this off saying this. The NFL Pro Bowl beat the NBA All-Star Game and the Daytona 500 in ratings. Football is just something that people are attracted to in America. And it is professional football. I agree with you, and I don't know where this is going to go. But just as long as they know their place, they'll be fine. I think what happened with the XFL previously was, you know, when COVID wiped it out. Because I think it actually was doing pretty well, especially when you were able to bet on it. You know, it brought in an audience, and it brought in something to do on, you know, a Sunday morning or a Saturday night in April or in March or whenever it was taking place. What happened with the AF is that they were trying to get big too quickly. It's just like, guys, we need to develop this. This is going to take time. This isn't something that we're going to get rich in 2 years or 3 years. This is like an 8 to 10 year project. And as much as I dislike The Rock, I like the way he's going about this. Start this off as a partnership, work with them, try new technologies, develop new ideas, and then 8 to 10 years from now, you can figure out what you're going to do. I don't think you can compete with the NFL, but I do think there is a market for a spring league. I do. I don't know how it's going to work, but there's definitely talent out there, and the talent aspect is not a part of this initial agreement. But you can certainly see how a player, like I said, like Kyler Murray, could be upset with the Cardinals and be upset with the situation and be like, forget it. I'm going to go to the XFL where I'm going to be the best player. I'm going to make the most money, and I'm going to have a decent career. You know, people forget the USFL originally, when it came out, was actually successful with players like Steve Young and players like Jim Kelly, that it worked and they were doing well. It's just that a certain person got involved and tanked the whole league. So I do think there's a market for it, as long as they understand their place and understand revenue will come down the road. They can make this work, especially just in terms of gambling. They're going to have a chance to make money just on the gambling part of it. And I do think in regards to the NFL, it is going to help for rule changes. Maybe the sky judge, which we've been talking about. The other thing, officiating. Get some officials in there, and maybe they graduate to the NFL. Maybe that could be an area that's helpful. Equipment. Helmets, shoulder pads, things that are making things safer for players. The other thing is as far as the USFL is concerned, I think it's great because it's going to create some competition there. And who knows, down the line, maybe the winner of the USFL league and the winner of the XFL league, they meet in a championship game. Like, there's certainly not a lot of value now, but depending on how they grow the brand, there can be potential down the road.
So where I see this as being beneficial is more, not necessarily a feeder league, but the equivalent of Winter League Baseball. Teams send their players there, their special teams guys, they send their coaches. So if you identify a coach like Kellen Moore with the Cowboys, right? You want to get him some seasoning as a head coach. Send him to the XFL. Let him go coach in the spring league. Let him get his feet wet as a head coach rather than bringing in the rotting corpse of Jeff Fisher. You know?
And the truth is that there's a lack of good quarterback play in the NFL right now. Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier this week about, oh, where is Matthew Stafford rank in out of all 32 quarterbacks in the NFL right now? And my immediate thought, and your thought too, was he's trash and he's not that good. But then we started saying the names of who's left now that Ben is gone, Brady's gone, and we were like, wait a minute, Matthew Stafford is a top 10 quarterback. He's top 7, top 8, definitely top 12. Matt Stafford. And people forget about this is that, you know, there was the NFL Europe, and, you know, and basically that was created to develop quarterbacks. People don't know that, but that's what that league was really created for. Yeah, they were trying to grow the brand in Europe, but they also were trying to get out of situations where quarterbacks got hurt or quarterbacks came to the NFL and they weren't ready to play. Players like Kurt Warner was a player who played over there, and James Harrison played over there. There's a lot of players that JT O'Sullivan came from over there. A lot of players came from the NFL Europe and wound up making a name for themselves in the NFL. Today, in today's league, the chances of getting another Tom Brady are very slim. 199th pick. You know, winds up getting, Drew Bledsoe gets hurt, becomes a starter, spends 20 years with one franchise, wins, what, 6 Super Bowls. That's not going to happen in this league now. It's not, the NFL is not designed that way anymore. But if talent could develop in another league and eventually work its way over, that seems more likely.
That definitely would seem more likely. And honestly, if they work with the union and replace OTAs, right, spring OTAs, replace it with the XFL, I think that would be great because you're developing talent and you're actually going to improve the quality of your product, because when you inevitably go to the 18-game schedule, these guys will be ready to go, and they'll be in football shape.
And people don't like this. I know this idea would never happen, but I love the idea of, hey, man, the worst team in the NFL has to be demoted to the XFL, and the best team in the XFL, owners would never go for that. But that creates a reason, right, for you not to come in last. Like, we cannot lose. Right. You know, it gives people a reason not to lose. Avoid messy accidents. Get better stopping power with your brake pads. Callahan brake pads. You never know when you'll be driving in the road and there will be a truck tire that you need to avoid and save your family. Callahan Auto. We really care about what's under your hood. But somebody that lost over the weekend was anybody who watched the NBA All-Star game. Because good Lord, that was awful. But rather than talk about how brutal and awful the contests were, we're going to just focus on some second half storylines, because believe it or not, there's only 23 or 24 games left in the season. Chris Paul was being considered for the MVP. He injured his thumb last week and will likely be out until May. What does the loss of Chris Paul mean to the Suns, CP3, and to this number one seed going forward?
Well, considering the fact that he was the difference maker, it's definitely going to make a huge difference. Even though DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker have more seasoning, Chris Paul was the linchpin of the whole thing, right? His acquisition is what took them from 2 years away from being 2 years away to being in the NBA championship, right? They had him in the finals. He single-handedly was the X factor. And this year, I mean, he's averaging 14.9 points per game. You're looking at 10.7 assists, almost 49% from field goal range. I mean, 84% free throws. He's having another bang-up season. And this is what Chris Paul does. And they had the opportunity, and the timing of this could not have been worse, right? Because the trade deadline has come and gone. There was one guy that could have been picked up probably on the cheap. One Mr. Kemba Walker. Like, Kemba Walker would have been a nice stopgap. Oh, here's a guy that just signed with the Brooklyn Nets, Goran Dragic.
Yeah.
Dragic would have been an excellent pickup. Now you're going to have Booker being the primary guy again. Cameron Payne is going to be the primary point guard, and he's been under the learning tree of Chris Paul, but is he going to be what Chris Paul is? I don't know about that, but overall, they're top five in assists, they're top five in rebounds, and they're top five in points per game. That's definitely going to take a hit with Chris Paul not being there to facilitate the ball. Now, are teams like Utah, Denver, are they going to be able to catch the Suns? I don't necessarily see that, but it's going to be sweatier than we think.
Man, you touched on that. That Kemba Walker thing is just freaking crazy. like really, like they brought him in, and they're telling him, don't play the rest of the year. We'll pay you not to come to the games and sit on the bench. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And did they not learn their lesson? Like, Boston didn't re-sign Fournier. They traded Kemba to Oklahoma City. And oh, what did you think? You were just going to, oh, man, we'll just get the Celtics trash and be good?
That's the thing. I think it was a very short-sighted, acquisitions by the Knicks, because they overplayed. Everybody agreed, right? We even said that they overshot last year, right? Being the fourth seed. And bringing in Evan Fournier and bringing in Kemba Walker was not the right move. It definitely wasn't. But as far as the Chris Paul thing goes, I mean, even if it's in a short stopgap situation, Kemba Walker would certainly be even a bench piece. Kemba Walker would be a nice little add for them.
Absolutely. I like Kemba Walker, and I don't know, maybe my memory's all messed up, but I remember at one point they cut him out of the rotation. Uh-huh. Then all of a sudden they brought him back, and then he was playing good. They were doing good. They were thriving. And now you're losing. So what does it matter to just play him? And the whole idea is, though, they don't want to get him. They don't want him to get hurt because they want to use him as trade bait for the offseason. Nobody's gonna. You think his trade value is gonna go up? Tell the Rockets and John Wall how the trade value for John Wall has gone up since he hasn't played all season. Like, what are you guys thinking? I don't get the mindset there. Play him. Let him get his value up. The Garden cheers his name. They chant his name.
Now, here's what I'm thinking, right? I think they see him as an ultimate change of scenery guy and ultimately a salary dump for the other ultimate change of scenery guy, one Mr. Zion Williamson.
Possibly, but the whole... We play to win the game. We should be playing to win the game. The Garden wants him to play. I like watching him play. You're losing anyway, so just play him. Play everybody. You should be searching for new ways to try to win because you can't win. And I didn't even comment on the Chris Paul thing, but, you know, basically, him being out the next 8 weeks, he's not winning the MVP award. That's gone. It gives the Suns a chance to grow without him. He's an injury-prone player. And the Suns need to be prepared to play without him in the playoffs and play without him sometime in the future. He's not going to play forever. And granted, we've talked about Chris Paul on this show a couple of times. I'm not a fan of Chris Paul. I think talent sets the floor, character sets the ceiling, and I dislike his character. I don't like how he talks to referees. I don't like how he agitates players. I think he's a dirty player. And whatever happens, happens. So, CP3, whatever.
If you've ever listened to a podcast and thought to yourself, hey, I can do this, then do I have the tools for you? If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. No specialty training, no specialty programs needed. Anchor will then distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. How cool is that? It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Go to anchor.fm and get started today. That's anchor.fm. What are you waiting for? Download the app. Speaking of whatever happens, happens, we do have another storyline coming out of the NBA, right? LeBron James.
LeBron.
Pride of Akron, Ohio. Once again, stoking the flames about whether or not he's going to join the Cavaliers. So there was that one little thing. And a little sub-story that we might have to wait a couple of years to play out. He wants to be on his son's team when Bronny eventually turns pro. LeBron said he will try to get wherever Bronny's drafted and play at least one season with his son. So, I mean, you have two sons. Do you see this happening, and should teams start prepping for this?
I mean, here's the thing. It's like, I've never seen his son play. I can't comment on how talented his son is. I don't really know. But I think this just creates a lot of pressure for his son, right? I mean, You're already the son of a great player. Okay, now he's saying he wants to play with you. Okay, so let's say you get drafted by, like, the Orlando Magic. And now your father, who's probably closer to 40 now, is going to come play with the team. He's going to be with you on road trips. He's going to be with you in meeting rooms. He's probably going to, you know, talk bad about the coach to you behind his back because he's probably smarter and better than the coach. Is that the best environment to put your son in? Wouldn't it be better to let your son just go out there and kind of play and kind of make a name for himself? I don't think this is a good position to put his son in. And if you think about it, like, let's say what, in the next 3 or 4 years, we're going to be the bad teams. Is it going to be great for Bronny to be playing in Orlando with his father? Is it going to be great for Bronny to be playing in Portland with his father? Or Sacramento? You think that's going to go over well? Is that really how you want to end your career, LeBron? You want to be playing with him in a terrible town and being more of a circus than just seeing like how good your son really is? I don't think it's a smart move. And like I said, it puts a lot of pressure on the kid because you know he's thinking about it. Why wouldn't he?
Well, I have three words for you, sir. Madison Square Garden. They're finally going to get him. He's going to be 41 years old and at the end of his rope. And that's when the Knicks finally get LeBron James at 41 years old. And whether or not his son can play is immaterial. It doesn't matter. He's already taken his son's spotlight.
Yeah, but you don't want him to be drafted because LeBron James is his father and you think you're going to get LeBron James. Like, that's terrible.
No, absolutely
like,
not.
Like, think about it. Like, we're not talking about Bronny like we were talking about LeBron. Okay, nope. So he's already not that good. Okay? We're not talking about Bronny like people were talking about Carmelo Anthony, because people were talking about Carmelo Anthony when he was getting ready to come out to go to Syracuse. Mm-hmm. Like, what if... So let's say he's good enough to be a top 20 pick and people overshoot for him and draft him 6, 7, 5, or 1
for
because of
his
father.
Dad.
That's awful, man. That's just going to be awful. That's Anthony Bennett status, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And teams, you know what? The other thing you need to really be thinking about, you know, yes, LeBron James, you know, he is a legend. And this year he's doing well, right? He's averaging 29.1 points, almost 7 assists, 52% from the field. Yes, that's great. He's also 37 years old. Father Time is undefeated.
Ah, Tom Brady beat Father Time.
I don't know about that. He made it. He might have to deal with Giselle because she's taking Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now.
Giselle.
But LeBron James can't keep going at the rate he's been going. And it's just your body's going to break down. He's already started to break down since he's been in L.A. So, yeah, it's going to be the law of diminishing returns. What are you going to pay for? And is he going to take a mid-level exception to do this? Probably not. Fiscally, it's going to be a nightmare because you have to pay your stars. You're going to have to pay LeBron, who's on the back end of his career, kind of like Jordan was with the Wizards. That's what you're probably going to be getting. You'll get flashes, but you're not going to get consistency. And you're going to get a question mark with his son. It's just a big question mark, and I don't think teams are going to necessarily touch it, if only for the fact that they want to sell tickets and put asses in seats. Now, does that benefit LeBron, right? Or is that – he's very self-aware, and he's very aware of his legacy, and so is his camp. Rich Paul came out this week and tried to take Michael Jordan down a peg for being on the NBA 75 because LeBron's road was harder. Shut up. Shut up with that. Now, with somebody who's very self-aware of his legacy and self-aware of his brand, I don't necessarily think LeBron would end up in Sacramento. You know, I don't think LeBron would go to Utah. I don't know if LeBron would go to New Orleans. He's a, you know, I don't think that, you know, regardless of what he says, your actions speak differently. He either went to huge markets, he went to Miami, he went to LA, or he stayed in Cleveland. I think the only way this works is if Cleveland drafts him, and then that's even more of a crucible, right? Because LeBron not only played there, but he won there. That's even worse if you're Bronny. You know, if it's the Minnesota Timberwolves, okay, whatever. But you're either going to end up in a big market or you're going to end up in Cleveland, because that's the track record of one Mr. LeBron James.
Are you in need of air care maintenance or service? I have the company for you. Air Care Technicians. They service the Westchester and Northern Bronx area and can help you with all your heating and cooling maintenance and service needs. Just give them a call at 914-315-1547. Again, that's 914-315-1547. Or shoot them an email at aircaretechnicians@gmail.com. These guys are the real deal, as they are veteran-owned, licensed, and insured. Make sure to tell them that D&Z sent you.
More or less? All right, boys and girls, we have a statement. And that statement is more likely to happen or less likely to happen. And here we go. More or less likely, the 2022 MLB opening day will start on time.
Jeez, less likely. There are so many things in the way of getting this resolved. I don't see how it's gonna get resolved. Salary cap for one, they're like $70 million off of the salary cap. The players are harping on service time because they want to get paid quicker, and players are upset about tanking. Teams not competing to win championships. I mean, I'm siding with the owners. I don't know how you feel about this, but I am. If I'm an owner, I want a lower salary cap. I don't want to spend $240 million. You know, 260. No, I want to spend 214, 210. Yeah, that's it for me. Like, especially if I'm a small market team, I'm not killing myself. All right. I need service time. I need to help save money, and I need my team. So if my team can't compete, I got to figure out other ways to save cash. Okay. And if I'm gonna really win, let's be honest, I need to suck for 4 or 5 years to get back into it again. It's just the way the game is designed. Z, it's just the way the game's designed. The Astros, Tigers, and Raves prove these methods work. Okay? And there are other things working against the players. COVID. I know these guys are billionaires. I know these owners are billionaires, but they haven't had full stadiums, full stands for 2 years. Okay? Baseball needs this season. They need a season of full stands to get back into the action. The owners should consider asking the players union to extend the CBA for just one more season, promise not to strike, so that we can just get a little more money in their pocket. Everyone get their heads on straight, and maybe everybody can get something that they want. Pace of play. There's too many home runs, too many strikeouts, too many walks. Nobody's putting the ball in play, and they're not capturing new fans. I don't care. I've been waiting to watch baseball for 30 years. It doesn't bother me, but you're not going to get the 9-year-old, or the 8-year-old, or the 7-year-old sit and watch baseball or go to a game with his dad because they're changing the pitcher every 45 seconds. The length of the season, and this is never going to change, but 162 games is too long. If teams were playing less games, every team would have a chance every year. It's the long season. It's the long stretch that hurts teams that don't have that much talent. And, the other thing is when you have the long season, the numbers are more reliable. The averages matter. You cut that number in half, you cut it down. I don't know if it's as reliable. It could be, but I don't know. And then the contracts, the contact guys, the speed guys, the veterans, and starting pitching no longer matter. So the workforce is completely changed. So, yeah, your Mets went out and spent, I think, what, $40 million on Scherzer? They were probably better off getting a 23-year-old or four 23-year-olds for his dollar figure. So this is less likely. The game has changed. The players don't want to acknowledge that. All they want to do is get paid. And at the end of the day, baseball is going to hurt the most because I don't think fans are coming back this time.
I agree that it's less likely, and the longer this goes, the less likely you're going to have full stands, full capacity, and you're not going to have the same goodwill. It's a different generation. It is a different generation. We were 9-10 years old, 94, you know, and it's one thing, like, baseball's in our blood. We're not the majority. Like, I acknowledge that. I'm firmly not the guy that they're targeting. They're trying to turn every broadcast into a video game. They're trying to speed up everything to where it's catching that short attention span crowd. Baseball is not a short attention span game. It's play without a clock. There's nuance. Well, at least there was nuance. That doesn't exist anymore. The entirety of the game, the strategy of the game is completely changed. The lefty specialist is gone. Double switch is gone. Bunting is essentially gone, right? That's another thing. The universal DH, you might as well kiss the sacrifice bunt goodbye. Stolen bases? Moneyball got rid of those years ago. The game has changed. I can acknowledge that. And
whose side are you on?
Oh, I'm totally on the owner's side.
Yeah!
I'm totally on the owner's side. Because what do we always say about contracts? You're not paying for the future. You're paying for the past. That's what these big contracts are for. Max Scherzer got that money not for the future. He got that dollar figure based on what he did for other teams. Mike Trout got paid mostly on his MVP performances and on his past performance. Past performance does not guarantee a future outcome. If that was the case, Jason Bay would have been an amazing Met. Jason Bay was a terrible Met, as you know. So, whenever you get a big level contract in free agency, you're paying for the past. And the problem is, owners don't want to pay for the past. Owners want to save money because they just lost a shit ton. And yes, I know about the TV contract. I understand the TV contract. That's only part of it. You still had to open that building. You still had to open that building with nobody there. You're running at a loss. So, ultimately, Tony Clark and Rob Manfred need to lock themselves in a room, and they need to acknowledge the fact that they have both royally fucked this up.
Yeah, and basically baseball's put a soft deadline for Monday, where they're saying, hey, if we don't have a deal done by Monday, then the season's getting cut. And the players already said, we're not doing extended playoffs unless we get 162 games. We want to be paid for 162 games. Guys, it's not happening. It's not happening. I don't see it.
I don't see it at all. Absolutely not. And
They're clueless. They're clueless. They don't want to know. It's either you're clueless or you don't want to know. You don't want to accept what it is. I don't know what you guys want these people to do. I think it'd be a different story if you had 2 years of phenomenal numbers and phenomenal ratings. Everything's going mm-hmm. great. Yeah. They're upset because they're not getting paid as much as they were. Because why am I going to pay you? I don't have to pay you. The developmental leagues are better now. Better than they have ever been. I'm getting a much more polished player at 23 than I am getting a broken down pitcher at 34, 35. And you know what? I'm going to take the chances with the 23-year-old because there's a better upside there. The days of paying like a Max Scherzer or Clayton Kershaw, Robbie Ray. Those guys, a lot of money to come in for two, 3 or 4 years in their 30s. Forget it. That's another thing. That's why Freeman's going to have a tough time getting a contract. I mean, yeah, Boston and the Yankees and the Dodgers are going to jump in and give him what he wants. But the Braves are like, dude, we're not going to give you an 8-year, you know, $210 million contract. We're just not going to do it. Well, maybe we'll give you a four-year, $140 if that works for you. But I'm not paying you until you're 38 or 39 or 40. Those contracts do not work. No. We won our World Series. We're not going to sink our team. And he's a great player, and he's going to do well. And then, you know, we've been talking about this for a while. But
no,
then you
important.
Have, but then you have the other, you have the other side of the, you know, you have other people who are like, now I want them to increase the salary cap. I want my team to spend money. Spending more money doesn't equate to better baseball. Okay, the years when the Yankees won their championships, when they outspent everybody and they spent so much money, guess what? Everybody can do that now. And that's why they have a tough time getting back there and doing well, because now everybody spends money. So, and then you have teams like the Rays that don't spend anything and they make it to the World Series. And somebody said, oh, that's not a good model for winning. That's not a good model for success. Hello, they got to the World Series. They spent a quarter of the money that the team they played did.
Now,
I think they won pretty good.
Now, I got to say, sustained success is based on what? Drafting, developing talent, and then signing them. And then moving them for cheaper talent.
Right.
Isn't that what Tampa Bay does?
That's what they do every four
That's what
years,
they do.
Man.
That's what they do. And
running back.
The rumor is that Austin Meadows is on the block.
Burn
and what
it
did
down.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you when I heard that? They're going to fleece whoever they trade Austin
Meadows
to.
That's right. If you get a call from the Tampa Bay,
don't
Bay Rays, hang up.
Do not answer.
Hang up. You will lose. They know their players better than you do.
They know your players better than you do. Speaking of that, more or less likely, Juan Soto will sign a contract for more than $350 million.
I mean, really, just based on what happens with the CBA, but I got to think he will, right? He turned down a 13-year deal. A 13-year, $350 million deal he turned down. He's 23 years old. I mean, he had 110 RBIs a couple of years ago. I mean, the future's bright for him. Somebody's going to pay him. If the Nationals are smart, they don't. They won't.
If the Nationals are smart, as soon as they break camp,
trade him.
I'm trading him. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Adios,
muchacho.
Adios,
goodbye.
Muchacho.
Goodbye. Goodbye. If I can get four prospects and
thanks for playing.
There it is. Like, do what you didn't do with Bryce Harper. Learn your lesson. Get rid of him. You're not going anywhere. Your team is awful. Start building for the future. And this is not saying tanking. Tanking is different. Build for the future. You can easily dangle Juan Soto to a team that wants to take the next step, and you can get their top three prospects, top four prospects, plus a major league player. Juan Soto is that good. And as a Met fan, it pains me to say that. But Juan Soto is that good. He will get you that. He'll get you that caliber of haul. Now, as far as will he, I'm going to say it's more likely just because of the past contracts. We're not going backwards.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Pandora's box is open, man. We're going to have a $500 million player. It might as well be Juan Soto. It wasn't Tatis. It's not going to be Vladdy Jr. There are too many holes in Vladdy Jr.'s game. Juan Soto is closer to a complete player. And if I had the money and needed to justify that kind of thing, that is what I would be using as justification for it. But for the simple fact of inflation and overvaluing of talent, Juan Soto's definitely going to get like $500 million. And that's obscene to me. That is absolutely obscene to me. That's the gross domestic product of a small country. But it's in Juan Soto. More or less likely, Aaron Judge will sign an extension with the Yankees before the regular season starts, and he will be named captain.
It has to be more likely. He has to. They have to. They have no other option. They can't let him walk for nothing. They sign him. They give him the captaincy. This is what it was all they were waiting for.
I want to say more likely. Honestly, I do. And if you look, he's been a model Yankee. He's performed, right? He's 276 career batting average. You're looking at 158 career home runs. Surprisingly low, considering he's a slugger. But he's the face of your team. Who else is the face of your team? Stanton? No. Gleyber Torres? No. You're trying to get rid of him. Luke Voit? No. Sanchez? No. Aroldis Chapman? No. Like, this is it. Like, this is the guy. You've been waiting for the next Jeter? You have the next Jeter. Lock the son of a bitch up. Lock him up. Make him the captain. And then figure out the rest of the team and build around him. Because what you have ain't working right now. But you have a guy who wants to be here. You have a guy that's producing. You have a guy that's handling the spotlight that being the star player of the New York Yankees brings. You don't just let those guys leave. And I understand that, you know, you want to start saving money. You should have thought about that before you traded for Stanton. You should have thought about that before you traded for Aroldis Chapman and then re-signed him. You should have thought about that when you signed Aaron Hicks and his back broke the moment he signed this contract. That's not on Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is the guy you keep. And last but not least, more or less likely, number four, Zion Williamson will be a New Orleans Pelican next year.
I mean, this is less likely, and this comes upon reports where he hasn't been in contact with the team. He did not talk to McCollum after the trade. He's not playing because he doesn't want to get hurt. I think he's going to force his way to a big market team, possibly the New York Knicks. So less likely.
I'm going absolutely less likely. Go back to draft day. The look on his face when he was drafted by the New Orleans Pelicans. He looked like he was going to be ill. That's all you need to know about Zion Williamson. He didn't want to be there. He hasn't wanted to be there. He does not want to be there, period. He's only played 85 games in his career. 85. Granted, when he's been on the court, he's been pretty good. Has he been transformational? Has he been generational? No. As it turns out, Ja Morant was the better pick. But you can't foresee that Zion Williamson is going to be that level of... You hesitate to say the word, but I would argue he's a bust. Considering what Ja Morant is doing, there's no way I'm keeping him if I'm the Pelicans. You have CJ McCollum. You have other talented players there. And you can get more for Zion Williamson because of the name recognition of Zion Williamson. And this feels like a New York Knicks or bust type deal. I mean, I can maybe argue for a team like Cleveland or, you know, a team maybe like Miami. Maybe they want to shake things up. You know, a team that's young, relatively young and hungry. But I don't see Zion Williamson being there long term. And this may have been the moment where it's become a bridge too far for the front office of the Pelicans. Need a little inspiration in the kitchen? Want to try something new? Or maybe you just need a new YouTube cooking show to binge? Well, I have the answer for all three. As You Eat It, hosted by me, Z. I invite you into my home and show you methods designed to empower and inspire you in the kitchen. Cook how you want to cook, eat how you want to eat as you eat it,
That's As You Eat It, available only on YouTube. AZ, You Eat It. Check it out and let's get cooking.
The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award.
All right, boys and girls, it is time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. You know how this goes. We put up a poll on our Twitter page at FadeRouteDNZ, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote. The winner gets announced a week later on our show. And do you know, D, who won last week?
Oh, I felt like I do, and now I don't remember. Who won?
One Dark Knight turned bad bird. Matt Harvey.
That guy.
Look who won the white pony. It was Matt Harvey. But that was last week. What about this week? Who are your nominees, D?
All right. For my alleged... You know what? I'm going to let you go first. I always go first. You go first this week. I feel bad. I always steal your guy.
Quite the gentleman. For me, I got three. Two from the world of basketball and one from the world of golf.
Okay. We're definitely gonna have different guys.
Number one for me, Kemba Walker. For agreeing to a big money contract and then agreeing to be sidelined by the Knicks after averaging career lows in points and assists in only 37 games this season. Just in time to be an expiring contract salary dump next year, Kemba Walker, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Phil Mickelson, for getting in bed with the upstart Saudi golf tour in order to gain leverage with the PGA, only for it to completely blow up in your face, forcing you to apologize and ultimately lose a sponsorship deal. Phil Mickelson, you are my lefty superstar, alleged superstar of the week, and last but not least, JJ Redick, for making this growing rift between Zion and the New Orleans Pelicans all about him. He was the one who was concerned about Zion's leadership ability when he was a teammate of his in New Orleans, and he voiced his concerns to management. JJ, Bubby, it ain't about you, man. You're retired. You're done. Go be a blowhard with Stephen A. Smith. And if I may borrow from Mike and Mike, please do us all a favor and just shut up. JJ Redick, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Who you got, D?
Oh, man, I got four this week. First up, I got your boy, Marcus Stroman. Ripping his former team, the Mets, on Twitter and telling other players not to sign there. Dude, you are 5'7 and posted, three double-digit win seasons in 8 years? You're from New York, man. Careful, the people you see on the way up are the people you see on the way down. Marcus Stroman, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, I have Zion Williamson, former number one pick of the New Orleans Pelicans, has not been in contact with the team, did not reach out to CJ McCollum after he got traded there. That's clownish, bro. You're supposed to be the face of the franchise. You are my alleged superstar of the week. Number three, Juwan Howard. Come on, man. You're taking a swing at another coach on a handshake line. This is grammar school in Chicago in the 80s, man. You can't be doing that. Juwan Howard, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And number four, we might have missed this a while back, but I'm bringing him up now. Matt Stafford, professional photographer Kelly Smiley, fell in front of you right before the Rams parade, fractured her spine, and broke two of her cameras on the fall. You made an awkward face at her, told your wife to handle it, and walked away. Dude, you are my alleged superstar of the week.
I saw that. That was so bad. Oh,
Mr. Nice Guy is not so nice at all.
No, absolutely not. And it was only a matter of time before the real Matt Stafford stood up. And that was a bad look for everybody.
That's a bad look, man. And then they tried to cover it up saying that she's not a good person, that she's a racist. Like, that does not mean anything. He watched her fall, told his wife to handle it, and walked away.
So, yeah. Like, what more can you say about that? And I don't want to hear that he was drunk. Yeah, he was drunk. Like, that that usually reveals your character. In vino veritas, I believe, is what the old saying is. But you've heard our nominees, ladies and gentlemen. Go to our Twitter page at FadeRouteDNZ. The poll will be there. And for all of our nominees, just do better. Just do better. Your favorite podcast has its own merch line now. Go to the Fade Store with DNZ.com today for all your Fade Route merch needs. I'm talking tank tops, t-shirts, sweatshirts, like yoga pants, we got those too. Like some cool accessories, we got those too. And we're not done yet. We have so much more planned for you, but check out what we have today at the Fade Store with DNZ.com. That's the Fade Store with DNZ.com. Order up! All right, boys and girls, it's time for us to order up.
Order up, order up.
This week, we are ordering up the most unlikely Super Bowl MVPs from 5 to 1. Who you got, D?
All right, so number 5, I went with Jim Plunkett, Super Bowl 15. He was 13 of 21 for about 260 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, that means 10 of his passes were just regular completions, and then there were 3 touchdowns. That's pretty weak. That was in the Rams versus that was the Raiders versus the Eagles. Number 4, I know this might surprise you. I'm going to go with Bart Starr, Super Bowl 1. Kansas City Chiefs versus Green Bay. He was 16 of 23 for 250 yards. 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. As long as completion was only 37 yards, it's kind of weak, man. Number 3, I really wanted to make this guy number 1, but I was afraid I was going to get killed for it. Peyton Manning, 2007, 247 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, 1 fumble lost against, this was against Chicago when he was with the Colts. I believe Joseph Addai had over 100 yards rushing that game. They pounded the ball on the ground. He shouldn't have got it. Number 2, Terry Bradshaw, Super Bowl 14. 309 yards, 2 touchdowns, but 3 interceptions against the Rams in the 80s. And number 1, Larry Brown. We talked about it last week with Chris Johnson. Super Bowl 30. Neil O'Donnell threw him 2 beautiful passes That was all he did all game. He had 2 interceptions. He returned them close enough so that the Cowboys could punch him in. And that's all he did. And that was Pittsburgh against Dallas in Super Bowl 30. What do you got, Z?
Well, not as much Peyton Manning hate. Definitely not as much Peyton Manning hate, but that's okay.
Trash player.
But definitely, like, some underwhelming performances on here, but surprisingly, you're not going to find Malcolm Smith. Malcolm Smith, the linebacker from Seattle. He had an interception for a touchdown. He had a fumble recovery, and he had 10 tackles.
Yeah.
So, Malcolm Smith, you may be the most obscure in history, but you certainly had a good game. So, kudos to you, man. You're not on the list. Number 5, Ray Lewis, Super Bowl 35. Nothing to speak of. Nothing noteworthy.
No.
Because that game was such an ass-whooping.
Terrible.
Game was such an ass-whooping. And I was looking forward to that as a Giants fan. Boy, what an ass I was. So, yeah. Because I guess they couldn't give it to the entire Ravens defense. They had to give it to one person. Kudos to you, Ray. But you didn't really do anything to warrant that. Number four. Dexter Jackson. Super Bowl 37, Tampa Bay. Two first half interceptions. Okay. What else you got? That's it. Like, what else you got?
And a route, too.
And that's it. Yeah. The in blowout game. It had to give to somebody. And apparently, like, that was the best of the bunch. Okay. That's fine. Number three, I'm with you. Larry Brown. Cornerback, Dallas Cowboys, Super Bowl 30, two picks. Neil O'Donnell gift wrapped them to you. So, whatever. Fred Biletnikoff, Super Bowl 11, four catches for 79 yards. That's it. Look at the game today. You guys have 79 yards on a play. Cooper Kupp, I think, had 79 yards in a quarter. They had 79 yards and a half. Like, come on now. Like, that's, like, eh. Number one, Jake Scott, Super Bowl 7, safety for Miami, two picks. Okay. These are all just very, I mean, you really could order them however you like, but they were just very much eh.
All right, this has been the Fade Route with D and Z. Thanks for tuning in tonight. You can catch our podcast on Wednesday nights on the Anchor, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to your podcast. Until next time, stay faded, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route, but we'll talk to you next week.
If you want to get on the action, we want to hear from you. Hit us up at Fade Route Podcast on IG. FadeRouteMail@gmail.com or slide in our DMs at Twitter at FadeRouteDNZ. Questions, comments, picks, segment suggestions, you name it. We want to hear from you. Get at us, in crowd.